they were not just functioning on their jobs, but they had a care for their students. And well, facilitated these kind of things in order for one to get on with one's student's work. And that, I think, I could be quite wrong, but I suggest that's gone out of fashion, or doesn't happen very often. And I don't think I was the only one to whom that happened. But again, it has great implications for what you as a person later on, as a worker and later as a supervisor and teacher, can extend to other people. I had already decided before I went on the mental health course that I would be working in child guidance, and my experience at the Maudsley made me more certain that this is exactly what I wanted to do.
But you did do an adult placement as well.
Yes, I then went to St. Ebba's Hospital, which was not a student placement for very long, I gather, but it was Miss Bree who was the supervisor in that setting. Miss Bree, who you mentioned
Molly
earlier,
Bree.
Molly Bree.
Gosh, she was your supervisor?
She was my supervisor, and I think she found me quite a difficult student, because I had a number of adolescents to cope in this setting. This was a very different setting. They also had quite a few students. She was my supervisor, but there was also Enid Simpson, who I think has probably since died, I'm not sure. But they were less secure in the psychiatric social work sense than were the Maudsley supervisors. Whether this was to do with this not having been a student unit for so long, whether it had to do with a different atmosphere in relation to PSWs in mental hospitals, I'm not sure. But I do know that I objected to the position that psychiatrists were allocated, in that they were thought to be the end-all and be-all, an attitude which I'd find difficult to extend to any species. And particularly so, since I, in my omnipotence, decided I knew a great deal more about adolescence than did the psychiatrist. And I could have been right in that, because I dealt with adolescents when I did moral welfare, and I didn't think the psychiatrist there knew a great amount about it. And the supervisor had great difficulty in reconciling my attitude to the psychiatrist's demands. I can't really remember the specific clashes, but there were some. Not too terrible clashes, but several times when I'd had to demonstrate that I knew more about the girls than he did, and that was sometimes in case conferences. So I think I made Miss Bree sometimes pretty uneasy. There was another case where, which I remember very well, because it was a Hungarian refugee who, a Jewish refugee, who was thought to be paranoid. And yet I knew that a lot of what were thought to be paranoid features could well have been reality features, but that at that time British people were so ignorant of what went on in persecuted countries that I still maintain that what was thought to be paranoia were to some extent reality events that had actually taken place. I'm not suggesting this man had no paranoid tendencies, but what I was always suggesting was that it related to his reality experiences. And I think what was not perhaps understood, that even when the need for the fears to go is no longer there, it doesn't automatically happen that the fears just drop away. And so again, this was another case where I felt it wasn't totally understood by the professional personnel in that hospital.
You make it sound as though you were a problem student to me.
I think I was in that setting. I don't think I was a terribly easy student. In fact, I think at that time I probably was thought to be a bit of a rebel.
Yeah.
But looked at in the present climate, I must have been a mouse.
Yeah.
But yes, I did. I was one of the few people who really... I always had my say.
Yes, yes.
And at that time, it was not so common to have one say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I... I suppose I was really quite critical of that last placement. Particularly as I had also hoped to go to the Maudsley Adult Department, and this hadn't come off. I think I was a rebel, because the next thing that follows was after training. Can I go on to that?
Or? Yes, please.
As I say, I knew I wanted to do child guidance work. And I thought I was going to be I was very careful in looking at jobs. I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted good psychiatrists to work with. I knew that even in that day they were pretty scarce, even in London. But there weren't all that many jobs around then either. I finally thought that one suited me. Sorry, I should have said I turned a number of jobs down that I didn't think were suitable for me. One in High Wycombe, where they had a pretty ancient psychiatrist who didn't seem to me to have much knowledge, and where the interview was quite extraordinary. After feeding me with cream buns, they then said I was to go out and come in again, and now the interview would stop. And various other ones that I didn't really think I wanted. And finally, I got to Kent for a particular interview, for a particular clinic. Now, I wasn't offered that post, but I was offered another one in Maidstone. And the mistake I made at that time was that I didn't go into the setup in Maidstone, although I'd gone into the setup into the other Kent clinic. By that time, of course, one was getting a bit worried that if you were too choosy, you might end up with no job.
Yeah.
But to my horror, when I got to Maidstone, I found a number of things which were quite unacceptable. The total staff of the clinic was untrained. The man who featured as the psychiatrist was a school medical doctor who'd been put into that place because the previous psychiatrist had died and there was nobody else to do it. He knew very little about the difficulties you encounter with kids at child guidance. And he was looking forward to my coming, saying that I could teach him some things now. He was a very nice man, but useless as a psychiatrist. They had a psychologist who was also not properly qualified, although she used a lot of Freudian terms without understanding them. They had a typist, and this you won't believe, but there was no typewriter. And they said they couldn't obtain one.
Yes.
And this woman didn't like to write things by hand because she was a typist. Come in. Where had I got to? On the typist.
Got a typist but no typewriter. And the typist didn't like writing things by hand.
That's right. That's right. And she sat there knitting things for her boyfriend who was in the army. And there was no room for me. There were two rooms. It was at the back of a church. Mm-hmm. And this sounds incredible to believe too, that when I had to interview people, not in their homes, we went into the church mm-hmm. and we sat in the pews. And the bells began to toll. This is absolutely true. And there was no phone except the one that was locked into the... it's not the belfry, what is it? The church warden into his thing. I mean, it was locked into his little room.
Yes.
And every time...
The
vestry. What?
The vestry.
That's right, thank you. And he locked it. And so if we wanted to phone, we had to get his key. And if phone calls came, by the time they were answered, I mean, the people had gone off the phone. Mm. And the parents of children used to tell me that their kids didn't improve. Mm. And I felt like saying, of course they won't ever. Well, the doctor, who was a very pleasant chap, he very soon spotted that I was not content with this, and he offered me, he said, you're keen on training. He suggested I'd only work a few days a week and for the rest of time spend my time at the Maudsley and mm-hmm. in other places to keep me. And it was very seductive because in some ways I would have liked it, but I decided I simply could not work like this. So, to everybody's horror, and I got lots of letters to say they had greater expectations of me than that. I resigned on the first day.
Letters from the employers, you mean?
No, letters from my previous supervisors.
Oh, I see.
Margaret Eden, Isabel Miller. Mm. It was the time for waiting. Mm. People were patient. Mm. PSWs waited for a long time in order to make an impact.
Yes.
People worked in mental hospitals, very much sometimes as errand girls,
yes.
until they found some subtle way of mm. showing that they could do more than mm. that. Well, I was not prepared to do that.
Mm.
And at the end of the first day, I knew that this is not what I was coming into PSW work for.
Is it after one day?
After one day. Well, I was prepared to work out my notice,
yes.
which was a month.
Yes.
But I was not prepared to stay one day more yes. than the month that I'd given my contract for.
Yes.
This was totally unheard of during that period.
Mm.
PSWs just did not behave like that.
Yes.
And psychiatrists were psychiatrists, and you did treat them with dignity, etc., etc. And really, I think a number of people had written me off at that time as impulsive and I don't know. Furthermore, I said, if this is psychiatric social work, it is not for me. I'm going back into some other kind of social work, but I'm not there to do this. Further, it raised a shindy, of course, in Kent, because they'd never heard this, and I was called before the medical committee. Is all this relevant,
yeah,
by the way?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the real stuff.
And they asked me to withdraw my resignation.
Mm.
And I asked them what they were prepared to alter.
Yeah.
Were they going to appoint a qualified psychiatrist? Mm. Were they going to appoint a qualified psychologist?
I guess by this time what you're in your mid-20s. 26.
26,
yes.
Just past 25, yes. Mm.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm, pretty good, eh?
And also what I hadn't said before is that confidential stuff
yes.
was sent to an outside typist in Tunbridge Wells that nobody had ever vetted. So handwritten confidential reports were sent to that stranger and then sent back by post, and nobody had seen the woman, which I thought was unforgivable. Well, they didn't think they could change it, but they would do their best in time. And I just said, well, why on earth did you think I would withdraw my resignation then? So it stood. And furthermore, I wrote to the National Association for Mental Health and suggested that that job should be blacklisted, because it seemed to me quite dreadful that somebody new of a course should have to cope with this. Well, I was all for getting out into social work again, because I'd had enough of this. And it was again through Margaret Eden, who, although she was disgusted with the way I'd behaved, nevertheless felt they should perhaps keep me in the PSW field. And she had previously worked in Nottingham and knew the psychiatrist in Nottingham, which was Dr. Bill Wiles, who had just a year before that started pioneering a clinic in Nottingham. And she suggested I should have one more try on the PSW line. And this is what happened. I went to Nottingham in, I think it must have been October 47. And that was a very good suggestion, and I stayed in Nottingham for 7 years. The Nottingham Clinic had been going, that was the Nottingham County Clinic, not the Nottingham City Clinic, because that had been going for much longer. But the Nottingham County Clinic had started functioning a year previous to that. And with Dr. Wiles as the director, who was not only a good director, he was an excellent teacher, and he was also someone who was a good communicator, who could use lay language to talk to lay people and other language to talk to other people. And he was extremely good in the way he could cope with the committees and the medical officer of health, under whose auspices the clinic was at the time. He also was very good in encouraging contacts with all the other departments, like the children's department, probation department, the clerk to the court, with whom we collaborated very much indeed. The Nottingham Clinic, when I got there, consisted really of himself, who was doing five sessions, a half-time educational psychologist, and I think I was the first full-time member. So that it fell to me to do a lot of the pioneering work, like doing a lot of liaising with the departments I've just mentioned, also talking to parent-teachers associations, really getting more clients than we had at that time. It was also very useful that there was a county clinic in which there was quite an experienced psychiatric social worker. So that when one wanted to start new things, like saying mothers' groups, when I had the opportunity of sitting in the other PSWs, this was Dorothy Worth's mothers' group, in order to get a bit more familiar what it felt like
yes.
to deal with a group of mothers as against yes. the one-to-one. We had very good liaison with the schools. We had excellent liaison through sheer hard work with the clerk to the county court, who was a very influential man in relation to many of the children we saw, not only for the probation department, but who came through other sources mm-hmm. as well. When we felt the court might have difficulties in taking recommendations for a child to go to maladjusted school, we could persuade the clerk to come with us to look at some of the maladjusted schools so that he had his own conviction as to the usefulness of this to the child and really could convince the bench that this was for the best. Equally, when we had difficulties over adoption cases, one particular child who we'd had in treatment for a long time, where we worked hand in glove with the children's department, who found at the right time the foster placement where the foster parents sometime later wanted to adopt, and a mother who had not bothered over this child for something like 8 years suddenly tried to contest this adoption. We were able to talk to the clerk of the court about this so that he could inform the relevant people
yes.
about some of the things before it even came into court. So that really all I can say that without Seaboom, we had better liaison with the relevant people in the Notts County area
yes.
than we now would seem to have with Seaboom.
Yes. Well, you put that down to the people involved?
Yes, I think it was everybody's effort. The clinic certainly, 1 or 2 years later, the clinic had become a central point for organizing discussions. I think seminars would probably be too highfalutin a name for that time. One certainly never talked about seminars. But to all extent and purposes, there were seminars. They were ongoing. Some were perhaps more like consultations. Others were ongoing learning facilities that people had. We were in and out of each other's offices. We could just pop in. We didn't always have to appoint. I could walk into court and out of court at any time. The probation officers could walk in and out of the clinic.
Yes.
So could the children's department people. And if there was any disagreement, we could get together and sort it out
yes.
Without writing long memos to each other.
Yes. Were you in Clarendon Street? Or?
No, we were at... it was part of the lace market.
Shire Hall.
It was near the old Shire Hall.
Yes.
I wonder if that building still stands. It was on top of it, there was some tobacco firm, and we had yes. the whole of the first floor.
Yes.
But it had adequate accommodation.
With the health department.
With the health department, that's right. That's right, yes, I remember.
Yes.
But by that time, had the clinic moved already?
Yes, the clinic was in Clarendon
Street. It was in Clarendon Street, yes.
Yes.
Well, that was before that. But the accommodation was marvellous. We had large playrooms for the kids, so that eventually we had a part-time therapist, we had 1.5 psychologists, we had 2 part-time psychiatrists, we had a number of registrars coming in and out. We had 3 psychiatric social workers, but that was not till the end I left, which was 7 years later. But it was to do with the liaison. Clinic staff was always invited to magistrate dinner, which was organized by the clerk to the court, where there were 4 weekly meetings in a lovely old country pub just outside Nottingham, where a number of professional staff, clinic staff, children's department staff, probation officers, of course, would meet with the magistrates to discuss any problems that were of mutual concern, and we would do that over dinner.
Yes.
And really, it was a marvelous setting. Our psychologists had very easy access to the schools. Mm. And one really learned a lot from one's colleagues. I think, on the whole, I learned an enormous amount from this particular psychiatrist. And I think this is another very important point, that during one's first years, one goes on learning so fast that it really is important to get oneself into a setting initially where you can learn.
Yes.
I myself didn't particularly want to go to a setting which most other students who finished the mental health course wanted to do, where there were other PSWs.
Yes.
I didn't particularly go for that.
Yes.
But I did want colleagues who could enable one to learn further.
Yes.
And in that I was very fortunate in this psychiatrist, in the psychologist colleagues, and also that there was an accessible PSW in the city clinic.
Yes.
So it really was the best of both worlds.
Yes.
And also, of course, I like pioneering, I like building things up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, one had great opportunity to do that. And eventually, you know, you linked up with other people in the community. A few years later, I lectured to the children, to the nurses in the children's hospital in Nottingham.
Yes.
And so one's circle widened beyond, you know, the immediate parent-teachers associations and community groups, etc.
And that went on for 7 years?
This went on for 7 years with 1 year in the States.
Mm. Oh, I see you're in the States in...
I started Nottingham in 47. Mm. I went to the States at the end of 51,
uh-huh.
came back in 52,
yes.
and then left Nottingham finally at the end of 54.
Yes. Did you do a course in the States?
In the States, yes. As I said earlier, I wanted to know more about how you taught social work. And that was something I had not learned at the LSE because of the absence of learning through case records. So that was my immediate reason for going. And I did 1 year at the New York School of Social Work, which is now Columbia University. But at that time it was still at a separate campus. It was in a lovely house, the Carnegie House, which was a beautiful house on Fifth Avenue, with a garden and a small enough atmosphere to be conducive for discussing and sorting things out. And that was during the McCarthy era.
Yeah.
And was the only place in the whole of the States that I found where you could talk freely about any political implications of that period. But it was there that I learned really how to teach social work.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But I took a number of classes for my own benefit, but I was also allowed to audit a number of beginnings classes from the point of view of learning how to teach.
Yes.
But that was until 51.
Was your, the second time you referred to, like, political things, and I wondered, were your political interests and your professional interests two separate things for you in your head, so to speak, or did it all merge into one in your general thinking about...
No, I think while I have very firm political convictions, I'm not basically a political animal.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a very committed social worker.
Mm.
And so, no, I was just interested in in what can happen in a so-called democratic country when, because of apparent threats, people's freedom to talk, I mean even their freedom to speech,
yeah,
is virtually cut from under them.
Yeah.
And that even in a democratic country, such fear, which of course I knew from Nazi Germany, can occur with such rapidity when the whole process is so democratic. And indeed, in a lot of social work teaching in the States, the democratic process was always brought in,
yes,
except it wasn't really apparent,
yes,
once you got outside,
yes,
the New York School of Social Work.
Yeah.
And where really, I think, even when you met people privately, they would sometimes say they would rather not discuss that, if you don't,
yes,
mind.
You mean a lot of what we would call social work values or social work principles that are being discussed in the New York School of Social Work are actually regarded as subversive outside?
Well, I don't know that I would go as far as to say that. But, I mean, what I try to say is that the only place where you could discuss implications, certain political implications, very freely, in my experience,
yeah,
in that year in the States, was,
yeah,
within the Carnegie Building.
Gosh. Yeah.
And that when you went to dinner parties and there were people you knew but there were also people you didn't know,
yes,
any kind of political discussion on the consequences of the McCarthy attitude to things was avoided. I'm not saying invariably, but more often,
yeah,
than not,
yes, right,
you know.
Yes.
And that was astonishing to me, mm, because I suppose it was a very short period. I don't suppose it, perhaps 2 or 3 years was it that McCarthy was there, but it was terribly marked when I was there, and it shook me that that could happen in a free country. Up till then I had thought that for many reasons it could only happen in a country like Germany, where I think in any case it is a kind of national ingrained attitude to split, you know, because conflict can't be tolerated, so it's very much easier to split things into black and white. And I would think that even now the German characteristic is to split into good and bad, and you know. But I wouldn't have expected that of a so-called democratic country,
yeah,
but it did happen. But certainly I learned an enormous amount at New York School, how to teach and how to look at the records, and how the same record can be used for different level of social workers to discuss different things at different periods. And that was something I had not got in any training up to then, in our English training anywhere.
Can you say a bit more then about the sort of ideas in general, you know, taking the whole that chunk of period now that you were arguing about amongst yourselves as social workers, the sort of things that were, I mean, for example, I know when you came back from the States, you wrote an article in Case Confidence, didn't you, explaining the difference between the functionalist
and the dynamist school.
But what sort of things were you arguing about? What were the debates? What did social workers get het up about?
Do you mean in the States now, or do you mean here?
Well here,
I think the other interesting difference was that, and I wrote about that too. No, I'm not sure. I gave a talk, but I'm not sure that I've still got it. But I gave it to the Manchester group of PSWs at the time. And it was to do about staff supervision. Also remind me to give you an article that I wrote on overseas students, the stresses and strains of this.
Yes.
You might be quite interested in that. I've got it here, so I can get it for you later. Yes, one terrific difference was between English and American social workers at that time, and PSWs in particular, that I think PSWs then had also a very peculiar stance, which was that you can learn from psychiatrists and you can learn from your colleagues, but you do not have supervision from your siblings, even though you might have a way more experienced sibling. So that I do not believe that in any clinical setup at that time there was such a thing as staff supervision.
Yes.
Indeed, when much later I asked one of my more experienced colleagues at the Child Guidance Training Center to supervise me on a case that greatly bothered me, because halfway through my work with this mother, she became extremely depressed, and it was quite apparent that if I pursued this way of working with her, which in one sense was necessary, because it was taking away from her a number of projections, which when they were taken away, left her more exposed and her weaknesses, that this could really mean a real depressive breakdown. I found that there was no PSW tutor who was happy to discuss this with me. They were happy to discuss it in our supervisors group, which met regularly. But I had to discuss it with a psychiatrist who was extremely helpful about it. But it was quite unheard of that you supervised a colleague, or supervised a colleague who had less experience than somebody else. And this is what happened when I talked about this to the Manchester group. Yes. They want to know about what went on in the States. And in the States at that time, they had certainly gone overboard with supervision, staff supervision, I mean, so that people were literally supervised from the cradle to the grave.
Yes.
Whereas here, they weren't even supervised in their cradle.
Yes.
There, the most experienced people were still supervised when they were really quite able to seek consultation as and when they needed it.
Yes.
So, I mean, I worked at the time in a very well-known organization, a private agency in the Bronx called the Community Service Society, which was very hierarchical, quite as hierarchical as the social services are now. But where people who'd been in the work for 14 years were still being supervised and were reckoned to be good caseworkers.
Yes.
And this certainly, I think, created a degree of dependency which was, which could almost have been disabling. But although people here wanted to know about staff supervision before they'd even let you finish what you were saying, they were saying, we don't really need it because we are qualified. And it seemed to me to deny really what is essential for any social work practitioner or anybody in a social work teaching position, whatever, which is that learning is ongoing.
Yes.
And if we think it isn't anymore, then it's time we quit the job, I reckon, because then you're pretty dead. But there was this terrific reluctance to think of supervision, and I think to some degree this still exists now in child guidance clinics. I think because unlike social services departments there is not the same accountability factor. I don't think child guidance has ever sorted out staff supervision. Nor, I think, in the experience of Berkshire, have hospitals clearly sorted it out. So that I'm not saying it's carried out well in other settings, but people pretend it's being carried out in other settings because they see the need for it. In child guidance clinics, I think even now they don't see the need for it. or they haven't tackled it because it's too difficult to supervise a sibling.
Yes.
But the PSW profession has always said they can learn from psychiatrists. Mm. And I think it may be that, in some ways, that has knocked the APSW for six. I mean, it only just occurs to me. Mm. Because in a sense, there has been a group then in the APSW who not unjustifiably rebelled against the aura of the psychiatrist.
Yes.
And they were the people who turned to community settings and so
yes.
on.
Yes.
And it was that group, I think, who got the ball rolling towards a dissolution of the different social work organizations like the APSW.
Who do you have in mind there?
Well, I was really thinking of the period when, I can't be precise, but preceding Seebohm,
yes.
you know,
yes.
when it was decided to have one social work profession.
Mm-hmm.
I can't exactly earmark it.
Yes.
I think it must have been around 67 probably, because
yes.
I remember I was in South Africa
yes.
when a lot of this
yes.
was decided, and that would be about that period. But I think in some ways it was the lack of dependence
mm-hmm.
of a vast number of PSWs. I mean, the lack of independence of
yes.
a vast number of PSWs, and the dependence, perhaps more in adult settings than in child guidance settings, but even in child guidance settings, on the doctor, that meant that a whole lot of PSWs who were trained as PSWs turned to other areas of work. And I think it must have been the ambivalence on those who stayed in child guidance work or adult psychiatry work that allowed this turnover into what became finally the dissolution of the APSW. Personally, I was always against it, but I was very much in the minority. But there must have been a tremendous amount of ambivalence for this to be allowed to occur. And even the people who worked in clinical settings must have had a lot of ambivalence and or reluctance to speak out. So that, I mean, I think what we're now seeing is, I mean, what one would have hoped would be that other social workers would be pulled up to, I think, what was undoubtedly a higher level of PSW functioning. In many settings. However, to go back, this got me onto staff supervision. There was on the one hand an omnipotence on the part of PSWs. We don't need staff supervision because we are qualified. On the other hand, there was in many instances an overdependence on the psychiatrists. And it is quite extraordinary that a profession like the PSWs could not sort out how this may have related to siblings and parents and etc.
Yes.
And of course I think as a profession the APSW was always very poor and very inept in dealing with aggressive feelings.
Mm.
Either with aggressive feelings inside their own group or when we met aggression from the outside world.
Mm.
And this is something which must go back not only to the selection of the PSWs, but to the training of the PSWs.
Mm.
That although we were expected to understand how people tick, how clients tick, And I think a lot of people knew how to deal with clients' aggressions, a vast group, overwhelming group of PSWs were unable to do was to deal with aggression from colleagues or other professional people. And that, I think, is another factor why we couldn't survive.
Yes. That's very interesting.
I'm sure there are other factors to do with it, but I think in the end we must have been a pretty weak lot.
Yes. So, I mean, if you look into it in terms of the salary scales that PSWs allowed themselves to be paid.
That's right.
In those wiki councils.
That's right. And, I mean, another thing, I remember being on the executive committee for a time of the APSW, and that was at a time when I was in Nottingham. And although the fares were only something like 30 bob there and back, at the salary we were getting, and I can't be precise about it now, it was quite a lot. And until I raised this, nobody had mentioned the question of fares to go to a committee meeting. And I remember the chairman saying, now perhaps we ought not to minute this. It was quite unacceptable to talk in money matters about a committee which was pretty important that your organization has given you time off to attend, to ask for the fares and to minute your request to ask for fares. Now this really does tell you something about that era.
Yes. Yes, now you say that,
I'd forgotten this. I mean, it's really talking about it that
you think
I
about
suddenly.
The president, the honorary.